Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, it was once the largest political movement of low and moderate income people in the U.S., but it was destroyed by an attack from conservative media. We're going to look at the history of ACORN this morning and hear from its founder, who will be in St. Petersburg this weekend. A new film called The Organizer will have its Tampa Bay premiere this weekend at the Sunscreen Film Festival in downtown St. Petersburg. The Organizer is a portrait of Wade Rathke, the founder of ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, as well as an exploration of community organizing. Before its demise a few years ago, following several highly publicized scandals, ACORN had been the largest community organization in the U.S. Rathke is a former anti-war and welfare rights organizer. He founded the organization in Little Rock in 1970, and over the next decade shepherded its growth into a national political powerhouse for the poor. Here's the opening of the film, The Organizer.
Well, where I'm coming from is a place that says that to some degree, you know, there's a whole system of thought in this country that says you can never really beat the government. Well, I think you can compete with that power.
Organization has been a voice for the voiceless.
ACORN is a grassroots organization considered by some to be the largest radical group in America.
ACORN is now on the verge of maybe perpetrating one of the greatest frauds in voter history in this country, maybe destroying the fabric of democracy.
Well, I think what happened was a tragedy.
This is Wade Rathke. He's the founder of ACORN. Oh, he's the real...
Most people actually don't know the real story. Wade built, with the help of a lot of other people, one of the largest and most powerful political organizations ever to exist.
He is tactically radical, the most gifted left-wing organizer of our time.
If you understand organizing, you realize that Wade is a big, bad dude.
What drives an organization like ACORN? A desire to help the poor, or a desire to organize radical change in America?
We pay price for reforms, because reforms are born in conflict.
The community activist group ACORN is shutting down. The group's announcement comes 6 months after video emerged showing some ACORN workers giving tax...
It had all the earmarks of a Greek tragedy.
Well, that's the opening of the new film, The Organizer, that's going to be shown this Saturday at the Sunscreen Film Festival in downtown St. Petersburg at the AMC Sundial at noon. And full disclosure, WMNF had strong ties to ACORN in the late 1970s and early 1980s. ACORN helped to start a network of radio stations, including WMNF. Wade Rathke, the founder of ACORN and the subject of the film, The Organizer, joins us right now. And Wade, welcome back to WMNF. Great to have you here.
Great to always be on WMNF. We're so proud of having been there at the beginning.
So ACORN once had 500,000 members nationwide. When you started it in 1970, what was your intent?
Well, in 1970, 21 years old, I was coming right off of having been head organizer of Massachusetts Welfare Rights Organization, and basically was trying to build a larger formation that spread its wings far enough to include a broad base of low and moderate income families rather than simply AFDC mothers and welfare recipients. So the objectives were fairly specific. It started in Arkansas largely because at the time we had a boost from the National Welfare Rights Organization. Wilbur Mills was the head of the House Ways and Means Committee as a congressman from Little Rock, and they needed some pressure in the South. So I convinced George Wiley, who was the founder and national director of NWRO, that, yeah, if he needed somebody to go to Arkansas, I'd try Arkansas. I'd never been there, but the deal would be that he'd let me try this thing, ACORN. And on that basis, and a handshake, I found myself driving into Little Rock June 18th of 1970, and obviously we just kept building it from there.
You had nothing when you got there. You started it from zip.
You know, as the joke goes, Rob, me and the rat in my pocket. But, I drove in, and I was actually, I'd gone to high school in New Orleans, so I'd gone from Massachusetts to New Orleans to, you know, unload some stuff and pack up some other stuff, and driving through from the south to Little Rock, I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm in there's nothing but flat cotton fields and soybeans in Arkansas. And so I can't tell you how relieved I was to all of a sudden pass Pine Bluff. There starts to get to be hills and trees. So I said, oh, thank goodness. you start from the beginning, and that's exactly the way WMNF was started. I had to find a guy who had the construction permit on a beach in St. Petersburg where he used to wait for his girlfriend to get off the late shift, working at a it wasn't called Denny's, it was called Sambo's, but it was kind of a pancake house.
Yeah, and, Lums or something. You're talking about Arnie Schlansky.
And I said, look, you know, you're going to lose this permit. Why don't you give us the permit and see if we can put it on the air or get an extension or whatever? And he agreed, and the rest is a longer story.
Okay. We're talking with Wade Rathke, who's the subject of the new film, The Organizer, that's going to be shown this Saturday in St. Petersburg as part of the Sunscreen Film Festival. He's the founder of Acorn, a group that got a lot of visibility a few years ago on the Fox News Network. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But you started Acorn as a multi-ethnic group. It crossed color lines. It was organizing low- and middle-income people. What were you trying to help them do?
Well, we wanted to see if we could. We really believed in democracy, that the majority of people should have a voice that represented that kind of strength. So what we really wanted was to build an organizational vehicle that would allow that majority constituency to have sufficient power to address issues they were finding in their neighborhoods, in their cities, counties, and states. And those issues turned out to be housing in some cases, loose dogs and bad garbage pickup and bad drainage in others, living wages, access to loans. There seemed to be health care, an endless number of issues once people started raising their hands and voting what to work on. And we grew from that point in Arkansas to when I left the organization and middle of 2008, it was a decade ago almost, we had 500,000 members in 38 states and 100 offices in the U.S.
I want to play a segment from the film right now it's a firing line interview that William F. Buckley did with Saul Alinsky, the guru of community organizing. And after I play this short segment, I just want you to comment about Saul Alinsky, who, at least in conservative media, has become a pariah. But let's listen to what William Buckley and Saul Alinsky talked about way back in the late 1960s on PBS.
Mr. Saul Alinsky first became famous as the co-founder of the Back of the Yards Neighborhood Council in Chicago. Yours is a highly non-rhetorical approach. You actually want to organize the poor, and you want to cause them to demand things. I'm trying to understand your philosophy here. I find it difficult to do.
Well, do you want to understand my philosophy?
Desperately.
You do? I find myself totally committed to the fact that a free and open, what we call, roughly speaking, a democratic society is the best way of life that we have. But you have to have as many people involved as citizens, being able to act as citizens, able to act power. Unless the people are organized, you don't have that combination which produces legitimate, bona fide representation.
All right, so there's William F. Buckley interviewing the guru of community organizing, Saul Alinsky. Wade Rathke, were you a follower of Alinsky? And what do you make of these attempts to turn Alinsky into some sort of pariah by conservative media?
Well, certainly I, you know, was fortunate enough to know Alinsky very briefly at the very, you know, he used to come do discussions, dialogues, training in Boston when I was running Mass Welfare Rights' staff. And so we interacted a couple of times on that basis. And I've heard him speak. He was quite a moving speaker, drew great crowds to college audiences there in the late 60s and early 70s, and, you know, read his book. So there's no way that anyone involved in community organizing was not familiar with Saul Alinsky, and he popularized the trade, if you will. ACORN was different. We weren't a coalition of organizations. We were a membership-based organization, more like a union in the community. So there were a lot of differences. This may be part of what we talk about later, but certainly we were involved in voter registration and as a nonprofit, but not tax exempt, we endorsed candidates, ran our members, and this, that, and the other. So, but Alinsky as a pariah, I mean, in some ways, some of the more conservative voices have looked to Alinsky's works to get to provide tactical advice in the much the same way people of different political persuasions might read Machiavelli's Prince. And I don't know how Saul would have thought about that. I mean, he seems to have a lot of fans on the right at this point. So
they are
like that.
They are buying his book, aren't they? Yeah, they are buying his book. So, I mean, would it be fair to say that you believe that in every city and in every state government, there was a chamber of commerce and there were all these industries represented and developers were represented and real estate was represented and bankers were represented. But the folks in the neighborhoods, the low and moderate income folks, weren't represented at all. They had no natural... or they had no existing organization, and you were trying to create that.
Exactly right, and that's been sort of my lifetime project and still is. I mean, ACORN in the U.S. Has had a lot of difficulties and sort of reorganized in 2010, but ACORN International works in more than 15 countries, including the U.S., with about 200,000 members now, and people still need that voice. There's a huge vacuum here in the United States now that ACORN is not as active as it was until 2010.
During the 1970s, you grew from just a one-state organization. You were based in Little Rock, Arkansas, and you grew by the end of the decade into 20 states. I want to play another segment from this film that's going to be shown Saturday in St. Petersburg, The Organizer. I want to play, beginning with an ABC report about all the gains you were making in the 1970s. Let's go back to the film, The Organizer, and we'll get back to Wade Rathke in a moment.
In Arkansas, where 70% of the people earn less than $7,000 annually, the Arkansas Community Organization for Reform Now, ACORN, is an example of a mass membership organization which is transforming citizen action.
These petitions are out all over town, not only in this group, but in ACORN groups all over Little Rock.
We weren't asking for anything we didn't deserve. We just wanted to be citizens. If you say nothing, you get nothing. So that's why we had to get up and go and push school lunch program. We got it going. And all of these kind of things is what we look for, the things that was missing.
In the neighborhood that I lived in, which was a middle-class neighborhood in the middle of the city, that was integrated very peacefully, there was an attempt on the part of realtors to engage in blockbusting. And everybody was outraged. We knew that it was something that was very destructive of race relations. So ACORN came in and they did a number of really interesting things hand in hand with all the residents.
Hi, this is Ryan O'Neill with Something You Should Know.
Hi, this is Rob Reiner with Something You Should Know.
Hi, this is Jack Nicholson with Something You Should Know. When a real estate agent tells you your neighborhood is changing racially and your property values are going down, then asks if you want to sell your house, he's blockbusting, and that's illegal. For more information, write ACORN or call 501-376-7151.
What was most interesting to me was actually not the victories, it was the fact that Wade had figured out how to build an institution.
Acorn's technique is to send its staff members throughout the state organizing people, helping them to fight their own local battles.
I'm a student of organizing, so in trying to develop the Acorn organizing model, I drew from my own experience with welfare rights and anti-war organizing before I started Acorn, and a lot from labor.
We're building essentially a union in the community, so it was dues-based.
We weren't tax-exempt, so that meant we could be involved in politics. If they wanted to go and endorse a candidate, work for a candidate, hurt a candidate, raise hell, if they had a majority and their hands went up and said, this is what they want to do, let's go.
There were a number of myths that Acorn just kind of blew out of the water with the model. The first is small is beautiful. Acorn said, small is good, but big can be better. You can have more of an impact if you have a larger organization.
We have a mass membership of low to moderate income people, about 5,000 families here in Arkansas. The organization has tended to try to build as much power as possible so that its membership could influence their daily lives and the institutions it impact on.
In the past year, my wages have increased about 10%, and my electric bill has increased about 40%. Now, gentlemen, is that fair?
Well, that's just part of the film, The Organizer, that's going to be shown this Saturday at the Sunscreen Film Festival in St. Petersburg at 12 noon at the AMC Sundial. And the subject of the film, Wade Rathke, the founder of Acorn, is with us. Wade, I got a sense, just listening to that segment, Acorn was involved in school lunch programs, improving neighborhoods, fighting increased electric bills, fighting against blockbusting, and creating a voice for the voiceless. What were some of the other issues that Acorn had successes on in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s?
Well, I mean, some of the largest had to do with bank lending. We were part of the coalition that won the Community Reinvestment Act in 1977. Our longtime housing campaign to try to force banks then to loan to lower-income families and racial minorities ended up with agreements that moved perhaps 6 million under those agreements into home ownership over a 30-year period. Living wage fights. We were involved in more than 100 situations, including raising the minimum wage in Florida on the ballot in 2006. And took a million signatures to put it on. It was quite the campaign, but that raised everyone's, pay by at least a dollar in the minimum wage and was indexed to inflation and continues to allow the minimum wage in places like Florida and other states where we won such initiatives. Those are two of the examples, fighting predatory lenders. I mean, it goes on and on, but certainly housing and income were important issues for Acorn.
Well, at the top of the film, you hear the voices of Sean Hannity and John McCain and Glenn Beck. They're all going after Acorn. There was a really concerted effort later on in the 2000s to go after Acorn, especially in 2009. What do you think you did to tick off folks like Sean Hannity and John McCain and Glenn Beck?
Well, I think the Obama 2008 election was extremely polarizing in this country. It obviously was a watershed in terms of its result, but Acorn registered more than a million people in that cycle as new voters. And although the registration was nonpartisan, it didn't distinguish between independents, Republicans, Democrats, or anyone else under the sun. We were registering largely lower-income voters, and that population tends to be more Hispanic and African-American than not in many communities. And I think conservative voices felt very threatened by these new voters. And we've seen the process and program of voter suppression continue to build traction on the right over the last decade as well. So in some ways, we flew too close to the sun, Rob. I think we had become something of a political threat in terms of how some established interests saw low and moderate income people getting a voice and building some ability to seek change in their own terms.
Well, the complaint, and we heard John McCain touch on it there in the opening of the film, the complaint is that you illegally registered people to vote. And I guess I gather from that he's saying that somehow that you were able to have people vote illegally. Did Acorn register people illegally to vote, and did that result in, let's say, a fraudulent election outcome?
Well, there's been extensive, academic, third-party, and political investigations. The law requires that anyone who fills out a registration form, you have to turn that form into whoever the registrar of voters is in that particular governmental jurisdiction. So even, when we knew a smart aleck might have filled out a form and said his name was Mickey Mouse in St. Louis, we had to turn that form in and say, okay, registrar, this one's no good, but these 10 are good. That's all public information, and when the Republicans decided to go after that during that particular campaign, and they've done this for several cycles, they would say, oh, look at Acorn, it's fraudulently registering Mickey Mouse to vote. Well, everyone knows that Mickey Mouse can vote in Orlando. They just can't vote in St. Louis or Las Vegas, and we certainly knew that, and that was just something the right-wing commentators made a big point of. The point of fact is, if Mickey could have shown up to vote, whether it was Orlando or St. Louis, he couldn't vote. I mean, that wasn't it, the only law is whether or not you can fraudulently vote. There's been, there are no prosecutions on these issues because you can't handle 1.2 million pieces of paper perfectly. You can't assure that nobody will ever, fill out a form incorrectly or whatever. That doesn't create voter fraud. It creates a bad voter registration document. There continues to be. I mean, Kris Kobach, who's the Secretary of State in Kansas, still continues to try to make a political career off of this. And there's some others, but certainly the president still would like to believe that somehow he got more votes than he wanted. But the real truth is this has been, asked and answered, investigated from top to bottom. There was no such thing as voter fraud here, and certainly Acorn wasn't involved in that.
And in another instance, a conservative video activist named James O'Keefe goes into several Acorn organizations, offices in the 2000s, and pretends that he's a pimp accompanied by a prostitute and supposedly gets information about how to hide the source of his income and also how to hide his involvement in sex trafficking. That was the claim. Whatever happened with James O'Keefe and Acorn?
Fortunately or unfortunately, I was not part. I had left the organization before that video scam was produced in 2009. And once again, this has been widely investigated. O'Keefe and his partner Hannah Giles ended up paying fines in San Diego and National City, where they tried that scam. They ended up paying a person who was unfairly terminated for supposedly having given them such advice more than $150,000. In his situation, he played along with them, and then as soon as they left his office, the Acorn office, Acorn Housing Corporation office, rather, he called the police. He had a relative on the police force and said, this guy's trying this, you need to deal with it. And that had happened in a number of places. I mean, the videos, I think, covered five or six locations. There was evidence in terms of Acorn's action that, they saw him in 12 or 15 locations. Once again, this was in the same way you edit a piece of the documentary into this radio interview. I mean, there's a lot of ways to edit film as well, and O'Keefe, I guess, should be known as a creative editor of some fictional footage. But this was a political time, and they made the most of it.
It's easy to edit a film and take it out of context and portray something that it's not.
Unfortunately, I think it's very easy. You know, I'm glad I've never been on film that much, Rob, but I hate to think how people could, you know, make a mishmash of things that you would say or I would say or any number of people would say.
You know, one of the most harrowing parts of this film is it shows you in Honduras just a few years ago in 2011 as some people are being evicted from their land, and you're on the side of the folks who are being evicted from the land for no apparent reason. And you're standing up to some of these armed soldiers who are helping with the eviction. Talk about your work these days, what you're doing now.
Well, we organized, I mean, our largest affiliate is in Canada with 80,000 members, and the next largest with 50,000 members is in India, where we have a union of street vendors, hawkers, street sellers, the largest part of which is in Bengaluru in the south part of the country. But we also work extensively in Latin America and in Honduras. We work in both San Pedro Sula and Tegucigalpa, as well as in a more rural area in Bacala near the Salvador border and Lima and elsewhere. I mean, the actual footage was a classic case of land grabbing, which is a huge issue we're dealing with in Cameroon and the Ivory Coast and Liberia as well, where people working on rubber and other plantations have lost their land to huge corporations like Bolloré, a French Brussels-based operation. But we still organize membership organizations. They're still all composed of lower-income families. And in the U.S., we have a campaign called the Acorn Home Savers Campaign, which is trying to organizing people in eight different cities who are in part of land contracts that are highly predatory. The Honduras thing you cite, Rob, is maybe when I had more commitment than common sense. I've seen that section of the film now a couple of times, and, you know, I think to myself, did I really know what I was doing, talking to a guy with a strapped, you know, rifle there in his hand? But it just, you get so mad about some of these situations that it's a good thing I'm behind the scenes more often than not. but that was one where we said, and it had a happy ending. They did end up there after the Galapista takeover of government. Some people tried to do these land grabs, and that was a local judge that was involved in that one. And in the end of the day, those families, there was bloodshed and people died, but they ended up getting their property back. So if you call that a happy ending, that was a happy ending.
When you look around the U.S. today, what do you think the biggest potential for organizing is along the lines of what ACORN did until its demise in 2010, at least the ACORN as you knew it? Where do you think the biggest, you know, issues are that are being unopposed by low and moderate income people, a place where people could organize and get together and solve a problem?
Well, I think the campaign that I was just alluding to, the Home Savers campaign, is that, you know, since 2008, there's been a credit desert in cities throughout the country and really everywhere after the real estate bust from, you know, sort of the bank speculation and other speculation that created that bubble. Well, what that meant is we've lost all the housing gains that lower-income working families had achieved over, you know, 30 or 40 years. So the percentage of home ownership for African Americans, Latinos, and others is down now compared to where it was, how it had been growing during that period. Now, in the place of banks that aren't willing to loan to people, there's no subprime market, so people who don't have perfect credit end up signing these rent-to-own, lease-purchase option, contract-for-deed instruments, and those are soaring in city after city. There isn't as much affordable housing. Rents are going up without controls. Eviction rates are at record highs city after city, including in Tampa. According to recent statistics pulled together by the Eviction Lab out of Princeton. So Housing still is a huge issue. We haven't seen the growth in wages. The creation of the gig economy and what we call in the globally, where I'm organizing, informal workers like we're organizing in India. There are huge numbers of these kind of contingent employees. There's no organizational representation. Rob, don't get me started. Okay. I think we'll be here all night.
All right, well, that's why I got you on the air.
Opportunities. There's a vacuum.
I got you on the air to get you started. We're talking with Wade Rathke, who's the founder of ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. He's the subject of a new film that's going to be shown at the AMC Sundial Theater this Saturday at noon. And he'll also be speaking there, doing a Q&A after the film. The film covers the whole history of ACORN, Rathke's history, along with the members. A lot of members are featured in the film, and a lot of the organizers. Interesting thing about the organizers is that you were able to attract people from places like Harvard and Stanford, from really great colleges, mostly white, although not entirely white folks, to come into inner city and low and moderate income neighborhoods to organize for your organization, for the organization that you founded. How were you able to do that?
It's sort of unbelievable now, but we would put small ads in the back of some national magazine that said, you know, low pay, long hours.
and people
and,
came?
You know, call this number. And as ACORN started getting more of a reputation of being sort of an active voice and starting to build a mass organization, we started finding people respond to that ad who, you know, this was the early 70s, who wanted to be a part of that. And we also, for a long time, had a recruiter in the 70s who visited colleges, including, you know, Antioch, where you went, and, you know, many other liberal progressive institutions. By the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, we recruited more from our local cities, from our own constituency. So the staff became more diverse in every other way. But the sort of the residue of the 60s was a strong, there was a strong ability to recruit in those early 70s.
At one point, you had 500,000 members across the nation. You had a budget that was in the tens of millions of dollars. Where is ACORN today? You say that you're still working on projects and that ACORN has the Home Savers campaign. Is there an ACORN today?
Well, there is an ACORN. The residue of 2010, when they reorganized, about a dozen of those groups took different names and continued to organize. ACORN itself is now a federation rather than one organization. So an organization like ACORN Canada is very large with a budget of several million and offices in Toronto, Vancouver, Ottawa, et cetera, et cetera. We have six offices in the United Kingdom, Paris and Grenoble, but a lot of our work is in developing countries, India, Africa, Latin America. And so if you put all these organizations together, we still would not be anywhere near the size we were in the U.S. At the time, because we're organizing different populations. And the project of ACORN International started while ACORN was still alive and well in the U.S. About 15 years ago. But hopefully these organizations that came out of ACORN in the reorganization 2010, as well as those that I'm still working with, will be able to take an increasing role in providing a platform for lower-income families to express their demands and win them, we always believe.
We're getting a lot of emails in. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Somebody once said to me that a person of your skills could have started a multinational corporation. I mean, I'm listening to all the countries you're naming and all the organizations that you're naming, and somebody once said to me, well, this guy could have started a multinational business, so why did he opt for community organizing?
Well, it is a multinational nonprofit. but you know, what drove me and continues to, get me out of bed every morning and just a rage about the injustice. There's a lot of anger and interest here. I mean, the issue of equity and equality here in this country and elsewhere has actually grown in our generation of work, as opposed to receding in the way we our vision, thought we might help achieve. So, unfortunately, the goals of ACORN are as dominant today as they were when we began in the 1970s. So this is turns out to be a marathon, not a sprint, Rob.
I've heard that.
We'll just keep on trying to build.
All right. So our first email is a tough one. It comes from Jeff in Port Richey. He says, ACORN got this bad because of their involvement in the subprime loans that crashed the housing market and all of the photo fraud participation, he writes. And he goes on to say, stop spreading fake news about conservative media having anything to do with the demise of ACORN, writes Jeff. I've heard conservatives say, pushing for banks to reinvest in their communities, they made bad loans, bad housing loans, and that ACORN was part of that because you pushed banks to reinvest in their communities. What say you?
Two things to my friend out in Port Richey. One is that two academics just put out a study within the last 2 weeks that found the real driver of the implosion in the real estate market was not in the subprime interest and certainly not in subprime loans to lower-income, moderate-income families, but in refinance programs where people were trying to operate on the bubble and the refinance wasn't substantiated and they weren't rolling the risk management. The second thing I've got to say is that we had agreements with major banks, Citibank, Bank of America, et cetera, and every year we would look at our portfolio and how it matched up to others. And I was at that, was at the table and running the table in 2008 at the meeting we had with Citibank. And at that time, the portfolio of homeownership loans that had come through ACORN Housing Corporation and ACORN's interest outperformed every single loan portfolio that Citibank had, no matter how high the income. So the facts are, if anybody was interested in the facts, that it wasn't low and moderate income people that busted that. It was institutions, greed, and brokers.
Well, we're talking with Wade Rathke, the founder of the Association of Community Organizations for Reform, now ACORN. It was a collection of community-based organizations here in the U.S. and internationally that advocated for low- and moderate-income families by working on neighborhood safety, voter registration, health care, affordable housing, and other social issues. At its peak, ACORN had more than 500,000 members and more than 1,200 neighborhood chapters in more than 100 cities across the U.S., ACORN's founder, co-founder here is Wade Rathke. Also, Gary Delgado is one of the early people involved in ACORN. Was he a co-founder or did he come second after you?
I wish Gary had been there with me from the beginning, but Gary was the first organizer I actually formally hired. Before that, it was largely trying to convince people who were already on the ground who were VISTAs, just the volunteers or, active in the community other ways, to volunteer and to help us do the work. But Gary was a key early staff member, continues to be a comrade and friend.
And he's now, is he now a professor at a college? I'm trying to remember.
He has a PhD. He's actually a filmmaker now. After starting and running to training organizations and research organizations that largely focused on minority communities and developing minority organizers, he's now largely making film for the work he does.
David writes this, could your guest speak about Project Veritas? I can't stand James O'Keefe and his manipulative and deceptive tactics. I feel like we need a Project Veritas of the left to fight back against them. We need a mole to expose the inner workings of PV and its ilk and then put them out of business. I respect your guest's work in building Acorn. I really appreciate his public service, writes David, who's in Tampa.
Well, I can't say any better than that. Yes, Project Veritas shouldn't be in business. So I agree with that listener 100%. I blush about what he says about me, but in terms of James O'Keefe has tried one scam after another, and it's amazing to me he's able to keep at it. How they continue to fund him. He's tried to get Planned Parenthood. He's tried to get National Endowment. He's tried to get NPR. I mean, he got arrested and, you know, on probation for a felony for trying to, for breaking into former Senator Mary Landrieu's office, trying to prove that she wasn't answering her phone about health care. I mean, he's had a wild career, but somehow, you know, the Mercers and Cokes and others keep funding him. So who knows? Not me.
John in Port Richey writes, I think Acorn was a good organization. I would like to see it come back. Maybe you can resurrect the organization, call it Oak, all grown up now, writes John in Port Richey.
John, come see this movie and meet me at the Q&A, and let's talk about how we can reorganize Acorn.
Okay. Jordan writes this, I was a follower of Acorn back in the day before the hard right deployed the fear to destroy the movement. The right employs fear-mongering relentlessly. The left is far more likely to use gentler tactics because we're a democracy. We adult citizens have an opportunity every 2 years to have our say on how our country is run. Those who do not vote are no better than those who can't vote, writes Bill in St. Petersburg. You were always committed to nonviolence, but you liked high-pressure tactics, right?
Right. We certainly, you know, our tactics were controversial. If I had a dollar for everybody who'd ever said, I agree with what you're trying to do, but we just don't agree with your tactics, I'd be able to fund the organizations for years off of that money.
Could you give us an example of one of the tactics, the high-pressure tactics that you used to convince elected officials to do something right or a bank to do something right?
Well, certainly squatting was one. I mean, in the 1980s, we initiated campaigns in states and cities as varied as Florida and Texas, but also in New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, et cetera, where in order to try to put people, houses that were being abandoned for various reasons with families that needed those houses, we ended up squatting campaigns where we would move families into those houses to try to force city officials, because these were properties that were tax delinquent and had gone over to city ownership in all these cities, to create homesteading programs where people could receive ownership for a dollar or $100 or some, you know, small amount so that they could move into those homes, rehab them, and end up owning the homes or doing whatever they wanted to with them. Squatting was always very controversial. Property rights are what founded this country. It's most of what a lot of the Constitution is written to protect. And so that certainly got people's the hair up on a lot of people's neck. But, you know, sometimes we're involved in street blockings, which have become more popular now in order to, you know, get traffic to slow down when school crossing zones or, you know, speed zones in neighborhoods. Once again, we start talking about tactics that upset people. I mean, part of what tactics do in organizing is put pressure on people to have to respond and change. And it often takes a lot more than just a phone call or a letter or a petition to make that happen.
I got to ask you, Acorn was started in Arkansas. You were there during the rise of Bill Clinton. Can you describe, I mean, what your thoughts are on the Clintons' politics? Because we always have an ongoing debate here at WMNF about what they stood for. What was your take on the Clintons?
Well, I mean, I certainly I knew Bill from, you know, the time he was only a couple years older than I was. I knew him from the very beginnings of Acorn. He the documentary goes through this as well. I mean, he used to. My office is a regular stop. He'd come by, put his feet on the desk, and, you know, chit-chat. He tried to get me to leave Acorn or take a leave and work for the McGovern campaign when he was running Texas. I passed on that. And, in the beginning, I would have thought that Bill Clinton's politics were very close to my own, and would have, and we certainly worked for him and supported him in every race he was involved in Arkansas. The bargains, though, that he ended up making around neoliberalism and in order to win that larger office and maintain his power were at the expense, unfortunately, of some of those same constituencies that he supported in the early 70s. So his welfare reform, his, defunding of public housing construction, I could go on and on. Those policies were not as progressive in the way we needed to build equality and in this country. And we see the results of many of those policies around trade and other things now, and they're still contentious.
Have you talked to the Clintons recently?
No.
Figured I'd ask.
Yeah, I don't think I'm on the speed dial list, given what I just said, you can sort of guess why. I haven't I saw Bill he actually was speaking at my son's college graduation from the Rochester Institute of Technology, and he saw us in, just sort of in the crowd and pulled us over for a picture, and we visited for a couple of minutes. I guess that was, 2000-something. So I haven't seen him for quite a while, but
because
certainly, we go back. That's all I can say.
Because my understanding is that sometimes politicians will reach out to you and ask for advice, and let me just ask you about one that I think may be on your list, and that's former President Lula da Silva of Brazil.
Well, I'd take a call from Lula anytime, although I think, unfortunately, he'd have to have permission to use the phone in a Brazilian jail right now. We certainly took a group of organizers to observe for a week or so the first time he was elected and followed his career, but we've never actually built Acorn in Brazil. So he's somebody I have a lot of admiration for about much of what he was able to do in Brazil. But I wish I was on first-name basis with Lula.
Okay, I misunderstood. Here's an email from Ernie. He says, the best democracy money can buy has much to say about who was to blame for the mortgage crisis. And Ernie goes on to write, primarily two billionaires who profited mightily at other people's expense, writes Ernie in Port Richey. Go ahead.
Port Richey is obviously got a lot of people listening to your show.
Maybe that's where you should show. Maybe that's where you should show the film.
Port Richey. It sounds like there's hope for all of us there. But once again, all I can do is say amen. And I'm glad he's doing the research and trying to get the word out. A lot of Wall Street and Washington D.C. have not learned the lessons from the financial crisis, the Great Recession of 2007-2008. So I think it is up to my friend in Port Richey and the rest of us to keep those lessons in front of all of us. There are many of these practices, attempts to now dilute Dodd-Frank even more, let banks once again lower the gates and go wild, just means we'll have this happen to us in another decade or less.
Wade, in the minute or so that we have left, let me ask you about two things. What do you think of the, in terms of your, organizing over the years and familiarity with a lot of issues that low and moderate income people are concerned about. What do you think about these two issues, single payer health care and living wage? Are those winning issues among low and moderate income people?
Living wages has been an evergreen issue, and we were certainly involved in numerous campaigns, and those campaigns continue to go forward in many cities and states. So that one, you're going to continue to see a lot. And frankly, what's happened to the Affordable Care Act and the compromises has revived a lot of support and interest. really on all sides of the spectrum to look more seriously at what single payer might mean and whether or not we can effectively deliver a health care safety net for people through private companies as opposed to some larger government intervention in terms of the health care program. So, yeah, those will be, you'll be doing shows on both of those issues for many more years to come, Rob.
Wade Rathke, thanks a lot for coming on MNF. Any final word?
Been a pleasure. All best wishes to WMNF, and I hope to see many people who want to say hello and learn more about organizing an ACORN. That's in St. Pete this coming Saturday.
And you do seminars across the globe about how to organize.
Yes, I do. Luckily, both within the ACORN organizations and helping other organizations that want to learn the same lessons that we've learned about organizing. I just finished, and there's a book out there called Nuts and Bolts, ACORN Fundamentals of Organizing, which is becoming very popular, not on the right side of the fence, but, among progressives. So we'll keep pushing.
All right, Wade Rathke, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks. That's Wade Rathke, the founder of the group ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now.